Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 327 of the Roguecast, recorded April 6, 2021. Punchy Punch Man, Knifey Knife Man, and Shooty Shoot Man. All right, we're back for another episode, and we skipped last week, and then they dropped a whole bunch of cool trailers and stuff, so there's a lot to talk about this week.
Right, yes. And some good comics hit this week.
Yep.
It's pretty exciting.
Yes, we're heading into April. April is a birthday month here at Rogues.
Yes.
By which I mean two of the five staffers, but really, it's the most important people that have
birthdays. Oh, yeah, sure.
Which is me and Nick.
Send cakes. Send all the cakes.
All of them. All the cakes.
Gary Oldman style. Yeah. Oh, I love them.
I mean, an actual Gary Oldman in the professional shaped cake.
Yeah, what is he doing right now? He could just deliver some cakes.
What do they call that thing where celebrities send like birthday messages?
Cameo.
Cameo. Yeah, he can do a cake cameo for
sure.
Us.
Sure.
Yes, we should definitely do that.
Only if he dresses up like his character from
the professional. He's just a guy in a suit. He's just a police detective.
Yeah.
No, I'm talking to like full demeanor and everything.
Yeah.
Well, he's got to be method.
He was quite eccentric in that, as he is
often. Pill popping.
Yeah.
Store-wise, we want to mention there's the newest Marvel Champions expansion, the Galaxy's Most Wanted, which has, I think, four villains in it. It's like Nebula, Collector...
I'm going to be the Debbie Downer on this because we just sold out.
Did we really?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, we'll get more.
Yeah, we'll get more.
Anyway.
It's around-ish.
It's like the Rise of the Red Skull. It's their next big scenario pack, and it's got a Rocket and Groot are your heroes.
Yeah, it looks awesome.
So, yeah, it looks fun.
Nick, I thought you were going to be a Debbie Downer, and you're like, that game sucks.
Well, I didn't want to crush Randy's spirit.
No, I've bought all of it. There's also an expansion for Stuff Fables, which is the, like... kids or kid-friendly stuffed animal game.
Yeah, it looks cool.
Yeah, it's a fun game. It's one of those that has the notebook that opens to become the map.
Yep.
Pretty cool.
And then D&D released their new Boneyard, heavy on the undead pre-painted minis.
Oh man, the Dracoliches that they released were fantastic. There's a green one and there's a blue one.
Yeah. And they are both really
cool. But, I mean, you picked up a bunch of the...
They have bits of dragon skin still on their skeletal husks.
You picked up a bunch of the boosters and opened some of them.
Yep.
And they are nasty-looking little creatures.
There's gross creatures in this one.
Yeah, there's, like, some of the creepiest, most, like, Lovecrafty demons. Well, I mean, they look like they're from Doom, actually.
Yeah.
Not Lovecraft, but more like Doom.
Yes.
Yeah, so if you need some creepy undead monsters...
Break out your BFGs.
Yeah.
And then we did a big reorganization of our miniature section, which we've got that rearranged a little bit, hopefully a little easier to shop, and we have, I believe, the most expansive miniature section in town.
I feel I can safely say that.
Yeah. We keep hearing it from people, so I'm going to assume they're right.
Yeah, the judgment comes from them, and they have never lied.
Who's they?
Our delightful customers.
The people around the campfire.
Would never lie to us.
Nope. Honestly, if they did lie to us to say that we were the best at something, though, I'll allow it.
Yeah, that's a good lie. That's better than the other lie.
Keep lying to us.
But we are working really hard to keep that section as cool as we can.
Yep,
so.
Yep. News-wise, let's start with the Suicide Squad trailers.
Yeah, it looks like we got another winner from James Gunn here.
Yeah, we are all big Suicide Squad fans here.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was an early comic for me. It's formative in like, it is one of my favorite DC comics.
Yeah.
And I was very, very
disappointed cooler than me. I was cooler than Randy, by the way. I was reading it from the first issue.
Yep, you started the issue one. I believe that may be the theme, Dave, as we talk about stuff today. I'm realizing that you were about a year ahead of me in getting into everything.
I think you have to throw out your cred. You've got, like, letters printed in those issues.
Suicide Squad?
I thought you did.
I might have one or two in there. I may have from back in the day.
Like, so if dear Mr. Ostrander, what's the deal with Captain Boomerang? Why does he talk so funny?
You know, by the way, if I do want to throw out my bona fides, I'd say that I read Ostrander's Legends miniseries, which introduced the team back into the DC universe first. So that was...
I was just going to send our listeners on a scavenger hunt for old issues of Suicide Squad, looking for your letters.
Well, the tricky thing is that I wrote under an alias sometimes.
Oh.
Unless you know my alias, you aren't going to find them. Now, I might have written it under my real name. I don't remember. People should go on a scavenger hunt anyway.
But this... James Gunn has said that he's taking a lot of inspiration from the Ostrander. You can tell it in there. Although the lineup is not Ostrander's lineup. Like, it's got some weird... Javelin and Weasel and some of those guys who showed up as, like, one-offs.
Well, even... looks like the lead is... one of the leads is going to be Bloodshot.
Bloodsport.
Who was a throwaway Superman bad guy in an issue a million years ago.
But you give him to Idris Elba and he does some cool stuff with him.
Suddenly he's, like, a big to-do, yeah. But, like, just overall, let's just quick say, like, this will continue the Suicide Squad that was around before, but it's also kind of a soft reboot, probably.
Yeah, it seems very clear you don't, they said you don't have to see the other movie.
But, I mean, like, Joel Kinnaman is returning his flag.
Although, and Amanda Waller is still...
Yeah, Amanda Waller's there.
Although, I feel Joel Kinnaman is going to do a lot better under James Gunn as opposed to David
Ayer. His flag already seems more fun from the thing. And it has the James Gunn vibe of, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, which looks like it's going to have, like, a lot of, you know, funny over-the-top stuff, but also mixed in with, you know, sudden absurd amounts of violence and probably some deeper character stuff.
Yeah.
The opening bit with Harley and her sort of, like, I think really Margot Robbie deserves some credit for getting in a producer role and what she did with Birds of Prey. And turning the character into more than just cheesecake. Like, her whole bit of, like, her sort of weird sweet clown thing she does of the, oh, you were coming to rescue me? Is really adorable.
I want the rumors to be true that Gunn and Robbie really connected and they're going to do another Harley Quinn movie.
That'd be amazing.
Because
Between the two of them, they could probably make that happen.
Yep.
My favorite part of that, though, is Flag's kind of petulant, we had a really good plan.
I honestly feel like Johnson as Peacemaker is going to steal the show.
Were banking on it because he's supposed to have his own HBO show.
John Cena's Peacemaker does seem to be sort of the... He's like a wackier version of not even like Captain America. It's like the wackier version of U.S. Agent.
Yeah.
But his whole the whole line about eating the bag of dicks off the beach for freedom, that cracked me up. Stallone voicing King Shark.
Yeah.
This is King Shark's year, or King Shark's decade maybe, because he already like won everybody's hearts over when Ron Funches played him in Harley Quinn.
Yep, the animated one.
Yeah,
I saw that GIF with him holding up his hand and be like hand.
Yep.
Immediately, like seconds after watching the trailer.
That looks fun. The only thing I kind of wish it's exciting and all. I wish they hadn't shown a Starro. I kind of wish they'd saved that for the theater reveal.
Yeah. The very tail end of the trailer does reveal that Starro's rolling around in there. The full giant starfish, although you only see glimpses of.
What if that's just the opening? What if that's like the cold open and then...
I mean, it could be.
That'd be great.
It goes into some
It would give them like the many little small Starros that are often accompany the big one.
Yeah.
Would give them lots of cannon fodder if they wanted to, or people possessed by him.
Yep.
So I could see it.
Also, Peter Capaldi as the Thinker.
Peter Capaldi?
Yep.
That's nuts.
Well, Nathan Fillion shows up as an arm fall off boy.
You do see a moment more of him in the regular trailer.
I do.
Yes. Also, the guy playing Polka Dot Man, I don't know who he is.
It's the guy from Ant-Man. It's the one of the trio.
Oh, it's that guy.
He's the Baba Yaga guy.
Yeah.
He's crazy. The bit in the briefing room where Idris Elba's like, we're all going to die, and he's like, I hope so. It's so good.
Yeah. It looks like they're going to get... The role already looks like they're giving him a lot to chew on.
Yeah.
I really want... What's his name? Boomerang to be more
Jai
Boomerang. I want Jai Courtney to be more Boomerang.
Hopefully they will give him that. The trailers don't showcase that, but they want to show the new people,
I think.
By the way, I also immediately saw worked into a lot of, like, starting to hit memes also from Peacemaker, who knows why Mad Men do what they do.
Yes!
My one question is, and I don't know what happened, why couldn't Idris Elba be Bronze Tiger?
I don't know, and maybe they didn't want to use Bronze Tiger.
Bronze Tiger is good.
I know.
Bronze Tiger is a punchy punch man, and Bloodsport is a shooty shoot man, and that might have been what, like, now Idris Elba clearly got all swole to be a punchy punch man in Hobbs and Shaw, right?
He's capable of being punchy punch man.
He was also Knifey Knife Man in Thor as Heimdall.
That's true. Why didn't he just, as he promised in Hobbs and Shaw, play Black Superman? That was how he described himself in it.
I have a feeling this comes down to they don't have Deadshot, they don't have Will Smith, and like Idris Elba is going to be our shooty man. I honestly think he's supposed to be Deadshot.
Yeah, that's probably true.
That's a bit of a shame that they couldn't do that. But, you know, if this goes well, I wonder if they have a thought about, like, Bronze Tiger as a big thing in the next one.
Could be.
I'm waiting for the inevitable people to come in and be like, I want your, I'm really interested in Bloodsport comics.
Oh, boy, do I have plans for you. Yeah, I hope DC, I love the idea that DC has some kind of plan to have, make Bloodsport in the comics, but we know DC is terrible at that kind of thing, so I expect it's going to be a... there are two comics that exist, and we don't have either.
You're going to need to travel back to the late 1990s.
Yep, exactly. He did show back up, by the way. I think Ordway used him later in that run.
Oh, did
he? I have seen him, and I think that I've even seen him sometime in the 2000s as, you know, cannon fodder type character. Yeah. Probably in a one of the more forgettable attempts to resurrect Suicide Squad, even. But, yeah, when he first showed up, it was the late 80s in John Byrne's Superman.
All our trailers this week are fun. The next one is the Loki trailer.
Oh, man,
the second Loki trailer, which I loved the first one anyway, but this this gives a little more insight into how the thing's going to be structured. Yep. And
right, well, so he's clearly been taken in by the interdimensional bureaucracy, the Time Variance Authority, the TVA, from Walt Simonson's old Fantastic Four run, Deep Cut. Asked to like deal with temporal problems
that he caused by stealing the Power Stone.
Well, are they all ones that he caused?
It looks like they show all the branching out, and they say basically you broke the timeline,
right? And they're kind of it's clearly kind of a coercive thing.
Yeah.
And so he is going to be trying to get out from under their thumb and get you know get ahead of them.
Looks like he might be working with other Lokis because it does look like there are variations of him throughout the trailer.
Oh, interesting. I didn't quite notice
that. I didn't catch that
either. Yeah.
That makes sense just in the way that they're doing the logo kind of with all the different letters.
Yeah.
But Owen Wilson is like the head of the TVA, which is really cool.
Yeah, his version of the sort of long suffering
they also bureaucrat. I have this feeling that when Walt Simonson did this that he had seen... and probably been influenced by Terry Gilliam's Brazil, which was kind of a dark futuristic movie, but also with all this dark satire and comedy in it, you know, that showed all this this massive bureaucracy of people clacking away at typewriters and everything had to go through, be filled out in triplicate and all that. Mm-hmm. And it's great when they're talking, when they're making Loki fill out the forms, they've been printed out on a dot matrix printer from like the 80s that makes the very distinct, if you've heard it, sounds of a dot matrix printer.
Well, Disney is rocking away at their MCU stuff.
Yes, they are.
Their TV is doing really well. We're entertained by it every Friday.
Yep. Is this June or July?
This is June.
Okay, so
because July is Black Widow.
Oh, right. But nothing in May.
No, nothing in May.
We thought What If might get slotted in there, but it looks like it's going to be a bit of a delay.
I think What If got slotted in November, October.
Oh, really? Is it later than that?
Yeah, I thought it was. But I could be making that up.
And the last trailer for this week is Space Jam: A New Legacy.
Not Space Jam 2. It's Space Jam: A New Legacy.
New Legacy.
Okay. This is LeBron James. Getting sucked into, what did they call it?
He says, I don't remember. He calls it What in the Matrix Hell.
But it's the evil bad guy is Don Cheadle. And you had me there. I'm like, I'm in.
It's the Warner Brothers world, and there's all the different worlds of Warner Brothers.
Right, so he gets pulled into that, and then it seems like the cartoons from all, of course, the original had Michael Jordan. Looks like they get pulled into our world, so there's going to be kind of like realistic CG versions of these cartoon characters running around in our world at some point.
Yeah, but it's the, you know, Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck.
But also, he gets cartoonified for a little bit, which I don't think that happened in
the original space.
No, they're playing around with a few new twists and turns on there.
Also, I saw lots of people making Ready Player One comparisons because they're bringing in, like, Iron Giant and Superman and some other people like that.
I think it's a somewhat fatuous comparison.
Yeah?
Yeah. Because, having Iron Giant in something doesn't make it Ready Player One.
I'll say this, though. Iron Giant's been in exactly three movies now.
Yeah.
Iron Giant, Ready Player One, and Space Jam. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it looks like the gag is going to be that all the Warner Brothers properties, that they get access to them to form the team. And for just by chance, those who don't know, the deal in Space Jam usually has this team of evil aliens... facing off against forces of Earth or the Toon World or whatever, the cartoon characters who are very physically outmatched by them have to use other crazy cartoon hijinks to beat them, and they rally around a Earth champion, Michael Jordan originally and LeBron James here. Anyway, like, if you ever wanted to see Granny from Sylvester and Tweety, like she's about to, like, dunk on somebody, this is your movie. It's goofy stuff. And I felt like when I saw, like, the Iron Giant thing, I don't know that I'm going to like it, but I do think that, like, Space Jam is not such an amazingly great idea, like, no. baseball or basketball players versus cartoon aliens.
I mean, we're talking
that, like, I think you just want to do a sequel that just duplicates the first one. I think you need to throw some wrinkles in, and the opening up the Warner Brothers library seems like a kind of a fun idea.
Well, I just hope it doesn't. I hope it doesn't ruin the integrity of space, the original Space
Jam. I hope so too.
I don't want it to hurt the legacy of Space Jam.
You know what the legacy of Space Jam is? Was it R. Kelly's "I Believe I Can Fly"?
Yes,
that is probably its most lasting legacy.
Yes.
Plus a whole bunch of T-shirts, a lot of T-shirts over the years.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to this. It looks like a lot of fun.
I will watch it. I don't know how I'm looking forward to it, but I'll watch it.
If it is released in theater type things, which I'm guessing it will be, it's probably also not what I would see.
But it's
on
an HBO
Max.
Yeah, it's one of their.
That's the thing. I know I'll watch it on HBO Max.
I don't think I'd be in a big hurry to catch it. I actually hadn't seen the original one until I saw it via the spoof series Master Pancake Theater, our local Mystery Science Theater 3000 types. And I enjoyed it, but it was also, I was like, okay, this movie is fun, I see why people dig it. And this looks to be really pretty close to it in terms of style. That is to say, at some point I'll catch it, and I'll probably be like, that was kind of fun.
Yeah, I'm not expecting great things, but I'm expecting a good time.
It better be great things.
Helen Mirren has been announced to play Hespera, the villain in the Shazam sequel.
Huh, cool. I don't know who that character is.
I think that's a new character. I've never heard of that character.
They've pulled out some odd characters, though. Like, the Duke of... What was the guy technically playing briefly in, like, Wonder Woman 84? Like, the Duke of...
You talking about the Duke of Oil?
No, Despair or something like that. They name-dropped, who Max Lord, like, I don't know, who he became or something. Huh. And, like, it was, like, when he was all-powerful... And it was like an obscure Wonder Woman villain.
Yeah.
That first character she fought was an obscure Golden Age villain. And so that doesn't completely throw me. But obviously, Helen Mirren can play whoever she wants.
Yep.
She's a great actress.
Yep. She can come in and play Shazam. I don't care.
I mean, Zachary Levi is going to be probably pretty happy to be up against Helen Mirren. That's
Sorry. I was talking about Wonder Woman. But this is Shazam.
Yeah.
Shazam.
Right. Sure. I'm down.
I'm excited for Shazam, too, because we get the whole Shazam family working as a unit now, as opposed to just
the... Is that definitely going to be the case? I mean, there's no reason not for it to be, but...
Because at the end, the Shazam shared his powers at the first one.
But I don't know. Maybe the power goes away for the other people.
They did all the important setup in Shazam, though, and I think I'm looking forward to seeing how they play that out.
Yeah.
That said, they also set up Mr. Mind. Is Mr. Mind going to be in on this?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
Maybe he...
They don't need to cast Mr. Mind, though. You don't need to be like... Helen Mirren doesn't need to play.
You gotta get a voice of Gilbert Gottfried for
it. Oh, God.
I'm about to put signals into your head.
let's not do that. You have to have something a little, like, computerish.
Or it could be like a Vincent Price kind of voice. Yeah, but Stephen Hawking voice, because he does have the little radio box thing. I don't know quite what would be ideal for that. But like I said, I could also see a Vincent Pricey voice. Yeah. There's a bunch of different ways you could go with it.
How about you get to Maurice LaMarche, and he does his brain voice from Animaniacs?
I mean, yeah, that was basically Orson Welles' voice. What else we got, Randy?
So Black Adam casting. They've truly turned Black Adam into sort of a backdoor JSA movie.
Yeah.
So the most recent is that Pierce Brosnan is going to play Dr. Fate, which is interesting. But also they've cast Albert Rothstein, a.k.a. Atom Smasher, Hawkman previously, and Maxine Hunkel, a.k.a. Cyclone.
Yeah.
Which is a nod to Red Tornado, which I did not realize.
Wow. Yeah. That is those are some deep cuts. Yeah, previously I was hearing, like, when they said Black Adam, Dr. Fate, somebody else who was, like, Hawkman,
mm-hmm.
like an Egyptian-themed hero.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it sounds like the JSA are working their way in there. I don't know. It sounds kind of cool. I'd like for it to come off.
They also have the cast.
They also have an ISIS. They've cast an ISIS, which they may be nodding to the 52 story where he had, like, the family and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. That would actually make sense that, like, she was, if I'm not mistaken, Well, what do you call the? He's from Kandak, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Are the people, the residents there, Kandakis or
Kandakians?
Is that what they are?
I don't know.
Anyway, she was, I think, like sort of a refugee there, and mm-hmm. he gave her, like, shared some of his power with her, so she got elevated, creating a new version of the old 70s, like, ISIS character.
Right. And then there was an evil crocodile.
And there was an evil crocodile that's... Is so that bad. From Captain Marvel so mythology?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. I wouldn't... Honestly, any of that stuff could make its way in there. Like, and you said ISIS is definitely in there.
She's in there. She's cast, cool. Yeah.
I bet they're going to do that. That'll allow them to do a little bit of a romantic thing. And also, if he is very specifically helping out, like, a single sort of refugee family, like, kind of as the focus, or, like, to show that he is not a complete... I know he's going to be an anti-hero. He's not going to be a complete villain.
Yeah.
He's still going to punch people through, their heads and stuff.
Probably so. I would imagine. Probably.
Jeff Johns is going to get a pass at this, right?
my friend who I podcast with, Fathery, was, I think, is kind of hyped for this one, and he sent me a link the other day to a video that Rock, Dwayne Johnson, posted of, like, I don't know if they were finishing shooting, and it was, like, the last day, and he kind of talks for about 3 minutes or so about the experience. He showed the script on the thing. You just see it sitting in front of the camera, and... The opening lines from it are from Johnny Cash's Man in Black song, and he says that it's not, I don't know if it's like the literal opening to the script, but it is the, it's like the keynote, I guess, of the thematics of the movie, is that, until basically that line, I forget what it is, the line in the song that's sort of like, until the world's a better place, I'm going to be the man in black. And he said, like, he, you know, every day when he goes onto the set, he reads those words. And he was, like, super sincere talking about it for several minutes and how much he really just, like, worked his ass off
for
it.
The Rock can basically hype anything.
He did a good job.
He is a good hype man.
He did a good job.
What do they call it on Young Rock? It's not the hustle, but...
It's not...
It something, right?
Yeah, it's like not the hustle. It's
the show. Or
the show.
It's something like that.
Yeah.
That's all I know about that. But I would like to see a first trailer for it, honestly.
Yeah, I'm sure it's coming.
Yeah. There is a new National Treasure series coming to Disney Plus with a Latinx lead.
It's hard for me to picture National Treasure without Nick Cage.
It is.
Is he not going to be involved at all?
They don't say anything about his involvement in this first note about the show.
But I mean, he's doing Netflix now. He did The History of Swear Words. He's not above doing TV.
I feel like if he could show up in an advisory capacity, or his buddy, the hacker dude.
Is the hacker dude anybody? Is he like? Has he become a big actor? Or is he?
No, he was on TV.
Is it Riley?
Riley, yeah.
So yeah, Riley could be in it. We don't know.
And also, there's Cage's wife, right? By the end of the series.
But that's what's her name?
Yeah, from Inglourious Bastards.
Yeah, she's too big now.
Okay.
But, I mean, Benjamin Gates has to be in there in some capacity.
I feel so as well, but...
Nick Cage,
I do think a show, because, like, it actually is the kind of concept that I think it would work fine as a show, and, like, it might even be, you know, better in some ways, but it is, like... The reason those movies are fun is because of his manic qualities.
Yeah,
that's
and
true.
I just don't know if anything can kind of capture that particular fun.
That's fair.
I'll give it a shot.
We'll see.
I like crazy history, conspiracy chasing Tomb Raider.
I mean, it feels like if they go for like a young Indiana Jones vibe, I think that probably.
I bet it will be considerably less intellectual than young Indiana Jones.
Probably, but you know they might retool a little bit.
This character's great great grandfather also. You know,
the movie is immediately built into American history. These connections to like the Illuminati and the Knights Templar and stuff like that, which do not exist. And I know that somewhere out there somebody thinks they do, but they don't.
What if somehow they resurrect Ed Harris's character? He did not die in the.
Ed Harris is going to be their big get.
Yeah. I'll say this. Disney Plus has been pretty good on their TV shows. I mean, all the Marvel stuff plus
Mando.
Mighty Ducks.
Mando. You know,
Mando.
Yeah.
Mando.
I haven't watched the second episode of Mighty Ducks, but it's fun.
I haven't either. The first one was fun, though. Cary Fukunaga the guy who did True Detective and Beast of No Nation, a few other things.
All the dark things.
Yeah. he is going to direct Tokyo Ghost, the Rick Remender project.
Rick Remender? Yeah, it is.
For Legendary.
It was Rick Remender and was it Sean Murphy?
It might be Sean Murphy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think this was a cyberpunk-y thing. It was. It seems fitting, so that'll be
interesting
to see.
Cyberpunk post-apocalyptic kind of thing.
We're going to talk about Godzilla vs. Kong later.
Yes.
The director, Adam Wingard, is going to helm the Thundercats movie.
That sort of fits.
Yeah, I can see it. Yeah.
Who will play Mumm-Ra?
Idris Elba.
No, he's going to be Panthro.
Is he really?
No, I mean...
You could be a Nunchucky man?
Yeah, he will be Nunchucky man.
Eventually, he'll be like Zoran, Master of Weapons.
And become an actual supervillain. He trained so much in movies that he found... this has like got to be somebody's origin in comics.
Yeah. I mean, eventually, this is what Keanu Reeves is going to become. Since he's like completely trained.
Absolutely.
Netflix has bought Knives Out 2 and 3 for $450 million.
So they will be produced as original movies for Netflix.
And they're talking about theatrical run, which they'd be stupid not to.
Now, is Rian Johnson still attached?
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Rian Johnson said he'll make one of these every year if he can.
And this and it would, of course, feature Benoit Blanc. A.K.A. Daniel Craig.
Yep.
I
believe it's his
role he was born,
anything else.
The role he was born to play.
Yeah.
And nobody knew it. Nope. But it was.
I think he probably... I mean, he had a ton of fun playing it.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Honestly, it doesn't exist without him.
Yeah. If when you saw Layer Cake, the first time you ever saw Daniel Craig, you're like, this suave British man should definitely play a guy with a Kentucky Foghorn Leghorn accent who talks in riddles.
Yeah. And talks about donuts.
I don't understand it, but it compels me.
I can watch that movie again now.
I mean, that's a huge get for Netflix.
It's a huge get, yeah.
And that's a huge paycheck for... Yeah.
But also, that was... those movies, if I'm not mistaken, like... Kind of... Or that movie, rather, was a sort of surprise breakout.
Yep.
That went purely on word of mouth. Everybody who saw it just said it was good and other people should go see it. So I feel like this is going to be kind of a win-win thing. Like,
Unless they screw it up.
There's always the danger that it just can't live up to it. The script just isn't as good. But it's going to be basically all the same people back together again. Well, that is to say a new mystery, but like same director who will also presumably be the writer. Brian Johnson wrote it. And same lead.
Yeah.
I know it's not going to have the cast.
Brian Johnson lives and breathes. I mean, this is one of his favorite kind of genres of
movies.
Like,
the notion of like, well, what's the name of the family in the
Harlan
Wembley
Thrombey.
Yes, that was it. The notion of him being able to assemble another group of like memorable characters like that is very appealing. Like, I'm like, I'll be sad to lose Jamie Lee Curtis and all those. Who's the Sweater Man?
Oh, Chris Evans.
I'll be sad to lose all those super fun characters and Don Johnson and all that, but that just means he has an opportunity to find a bunch more fun characters.
Yeah, yeah. I hope the next one's on a train.
Or maybe American Horror Story, they will play different characters.
That'd be hilarious. That'd be amazing.
Honestly, they're all good actors.
Yeah.
They could all do it.
Yeah, they could.
But it'd be funny because they were all just playing kind of bastards and stuff.
Yep.
And like if to see like Jamie Lee Curtis in like a sympathetic role after playing who she did would be hilarious.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll happen, but I would be down with it. It'd be like his theater troupe.
Yeah. I'm excited for this. I think they'll do well. Yesterday was First Contact Day.
Yes.
Which means that the Vulcans were supposed to come and they didn't.
Not till 2063, Randy.
Oh, am I ahead?
We're celebrating in advance of it.
We're pre-celebrating First Contact.
Yeah, we got to get hyped up because we're due World War III before we can have it.
Oh, that's a bummer.
But for those who don't know, First Contact Day is an established thing in the Star Trek universe of like it is supposed to be the day that Earth made its first contact with the alien civilizations, the Vulcans, and kind of started becoming the Starfleet and the utopian future that Star Trek has. And so, like, the characters in the shows, like in Voyager and Deep Space Nine, would mention it, like, once a year. They actually have First Contact Day as a holiday. And so they celebrate it. Like, Star Trek uses it as CBS or Paramount?
Paramount.
To promote new projects coming up and, you know, just generally hype up Star Trek.
This is their, it's their May the 4th.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty clever, honestly, because it was already, like, it existed before they decided to use it to hype stuff.
Yeah.
That makes it seem less cheesy.
Yeah. But it's just an invented holiday, just like Valentine's Day and Christmas.
Right.
We got some good presents if you're a Star Trek fan. They showed us teasers for, just a teaser for season 4 of Discovery, which, not much to it, it's just going to be...
But, like, you do notably see, like, just on a purely visual level... new uniforms, which
cool
are that look cool, and they are in the more going from the kind of militaristic blues of the show, which also was kind of how Enterprise looked, to the more vibrant gold, red, blues of like Kirk's era, but kind of retooled in a pretty cool way.
There's a little bit of Next Generation nod in there too.
Absolutely, they're kind of pulling from different eras for their designs.
Then there's the Lower Decks season 2 trailer, which is the next thing coming, because it's coming in August.
Yep. Which looks like it will at least give glimpses of Boimler on the...
Is that actually Riker? Is he voicing it?
Yeah. That's great. I mean, he's heavily involved in Trek now, where he directed a bunch of episodes of Picard and, like, Discovery and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so, if they are having Riker appear animated, he will be voicing
it. I think in this room, I'm the only one who sort of fell from Lower Decks a little bit by the end. I was like, I wound up liking it by the last bits.
Well, most people I know, though, like, most Trek fans got into it.
A lot of people loved
it. I just didn't.
But I think we are not, like, all huge fans.
No, I didn't finish it.
Yeah.
I think it wraps strong. And I think, so I'm looking forward to a season 2.
Yeah, almost everybody I know thought it wrapped pretty strong.
And then Picard season 2, which the big, again, a teaser, it's not until 2022.
Purely a mood kind of piece, but it had one big thing.
The big reveal is Q.
Yeah.
Not from QAnon.
No, the good Q, which is to say the skeevy but lovable Q, who tormented Picard all those years.
Yep.
You hear a little voiceover from him, and you see a playing card of a queen playing card scorch away and leave only the Q behind.
Yep.
It is very clear what their intentions are.
Yep.
Since he, like John Delancey and Patrick Stewart had a great sort of hero-villain rapport. It'll be interesting to see what they do with the somewhat more somber Picard.
Mm-hmm.
Are they, are they going to be, and John Delancey has, of course, aged as well, and whether they, is he going to say, he's like, oh, I put on this form just to, to humor you.
I think they should. I hope they do that.
Yeah, as like kind of like a poke at him. It's like, oh, my back. And, like if he's just playing at it.
Well, aren't there rumors that Guinan is going to be in it too? So that's
sort
of
true.
That sort of fits.
That's true.
They'll do all the immortals and stuff.
Yeah.
And then we got our first look at Janeway in Star Trek Prodigy, which looks great.
Yeah. Prodigy is their CG, animated series. If you think of stuff like Rebels and Clone Wars, that kind of vibe. We know it's going to be set in the Delta Quadrant, and it's going to be about a group of, I don't know, they're like hooligan kids or
alien
something.
Alien kids, right?
Yeah, they like, have stolen a ship. And it seems like that Janeway will be the holodeck version of her will be sort of an advisor to them.
Is what's her name? I always forget her name.
Kate Mulgrew?
Is she actually going to voice?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, she's talked about it.
People were noting that even in hologram form, she drinks coffee.
Yes. It's a good CG version of her. It captures like her look exactly. I can tell just from the modeling, I'm like, if the show actually looks like this, it's going to have a good look to it.
Yeah.
All kind of neat announcements, even if they were mostly just kind of teasers.
Yeah, the only bummer, I was kind of hoping we'd get something from Strange New Worlds, like a trailer.
I agree. It's honestly, it's the one that I'm most looking forward to of everything Trek coming up.
That's the Pike.
Yeah. Pike show.
Yeah. And then Sci-Fi has renewed Resident Alien for season 2, which I don't know if you guys have watched any of that.
Well, wait, I thought y'all have both watched it.
I'm behind 2 episodes.
Okay. I'm all caught up, but I think it was the final episode.
I've heard y'all talking about it, and I've heard people saying good things about it. Randy, just real quick question. Do you think I would like it?
I think you might. It's
I might try out the first episode.
Do you like Alan Tudyk?
Yeah.
It is basically a star vehicle for Alan Tudyk.
Yeah.
I would say, Dave, it is like a USA-type show. It is going to be a little wacky.
Didn't I hear it's kind of darkly humorous a little bit?
It is.
That sounded appealing to me.
You might like it, or you might be like, this is humor. I did not care for it.
It's possible. It's possible.
But I feel like he could feel for the main.
It's
character.
More like the you know, it's more like that Lower Decks brand of like their particular type of minute gag a minute is not my thing.
No, it's definitely not that.
No. But I'm not completely opposed to laughter. I will consider it.
But I was. It's like vastly different from the actual comics, right?
From what I understand, yeah.
Like Men in Black and a bunch of other stuff. Yeah, that's probably for the best.
All right, and then one little last bit of news. I don't know if you guys are even watching The Flash anymore, but they've cast Jordan Fisher to play Bart Allen on The Flash. So I guess they're going to.
I did see that. Yeah, I think we all reached the point where there's just too much too CW much. Show. Yep. I'm going to content myself right now to watch Superman and Lois, which is great.
You're also going to have to watch something that premieres tonight.
What's that?
Tonight is Kung Fu.
I bet Dave is not happy.
I watched the trailer and we all liked it.
I'm going to watch it.
I saw it show up on my Facebook feed the other day, and I was like, you know what? Maybe. but I'm probably going to wait and see what y'all say about it.
It's probably we'll see. A good thing.
But it was kind of neat looking, and then I guess if people have an interest in it, or have, pull up the trailer, watch it. If it looks fun, check it out tonight, and we'll reconvene next week to share our thoughts and opinions.
Yes. all right, so we're going to take a break, and then we'll come back to talk about comics for the week. We are talking comics for the last 2 weeks, that is Wednesday, March 31st, and Wednesday, April 7th. Mostly they were talking this week's stuff, although there are a couple things, a couple holders from last week, fifth week. I'll start with those, just to get that out of the way. There is a Image book called Shadecraft, which is from the creative team of Skyward, Joe Henderson and Lee Garbett. Skyward was a really fun sci-fi book. I had not realized until recently that Joe Henderson was the showrunner of Lucifer.
Huh? Oh. Okay.
Pretty good pedigree.
Yeah, and so this is a girl who like starts experiencing shadows. Seems like sentient shadows.
Yeah, it's another small town horror kind of thing, right? Or suspense horror.
Yeah.
I meant to get around to that, but like things just got a little bit too busy in the last week, and I haven't done it yet. But I thought the art looked great, and I want to at least try it out.
I really liked it, and it's already been picked up for Netflix. I think as a series. Wow. So,
goodness gracious!
And then also from Boom last week, Firefly Brand New Verse, which is takes place in the future.
It is 20 years down the road, and Zoe and Wash's kid takes over as the captain of the Serenity with an all new crew and stuff.
Yep. Although her mom's still in there, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, okay, Zoe's the captain.
Oh, I thought the kid was.
No, Zoe's the captain. Emma Alain Washburn is the first mate.
Okay.
And it seems like she's got a boyfriend, or maybe something, not a boyfriend, but a somebody. There's a whole cast.
But what happened to Mal?
Mal, I believe, is probably dead.
No. Mal is with the Alliance
but
now.
But there is another familiar face who shows up.
Yeah, you're right.
So that's kind of cool.
I hope that Mal has betrayed his principles and joined the Alliance. I'm sure that's probably what they did.
Sure, why not?
He's a preacher man now.
anyway, so yeah, if you've not been reading the Firefly book, this is a completely different Firefly book. That is
right. You can just jump in and have some fun with the setting.
This week's big release is probably Geiger.
Yeah, that's Jeff Johns' book is it Image, Randy?
Mm-hmm. Jeff Johns, Gary Frank.
Yeah. His chance to sort of stake out a post-apocalyptic storyline.
Creative team of Doomsday Clock.
Yep.
Doomsday Clock. What else have they done together?
Didn't they do that Superman...
They did a Superman together. They did some Superman. I don't know which one it was.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It was when he was working with, like, Donner, I think.
Yes.
You know, I was thinking Gary Frank. I just remembered his big thing he did, like, Midnight Nation and stuff like that was with JMS. But anyway... He's an artist who knows how to. He knows his chops. He knows his drawing chops.
But it's a post-apocalyptic sort of superhero tale.
Well, it is, but
it's more post-apocalyptic than superhero. But the guy has powers.
Right. I felt like it was almost more like there's weird legends and larger than life stuff. But it didn't. Yeah. It didn't quite feel superhero to me.
No. But he does have powers. He's like he's protecting the garden with his radioactive powers.
It felt to me like a super-powered Fallout.
There's
Fallout the video game kind of thing.
Yeah, but almost, but it feels more like the powers are kind of low levelish, almost more like what you would get if you had some powered up people in Mad Max or Road Warrior, Fury Road sort of stuff.
I mean, Gary Frank, as always, is very fantastic at his job.
There's a lot of world building going on. This I'd have to give it a reread, but like they're basically in this apocalyptic world, which, you know, think a little bit Fallout-ish. There's legends of the glowing man, and there's the organ people who clearly like capture people and harvest organs,
right?
And some other creepy stuff in there. There's a city that you see by the end that's ruled over by a little Joffrey-like piece of shit kid that's kind of like has like its, you know, neo-feudalism sort of going on. And it was an interesting first issue. I think I'm going to be kind of like watching this one for a little bit. I guess John's doing a kind of darker adventure storyline that interests me.
I
like post-apocalyptic stuff.
Well, John's is never not interesting. He does always bring something to the table.
I don't know about that.
And the art's great. I'm just kidding. The art is really good.
Yeah, Gary Frank's art's great.
Yep.
Then Image has a new anthology book called The Silver Coin.
Mm-hmm.
This is by artist Michael Walsh, who I believe is going to be the art on every issue. But he recruited a bunch of his friends to sort of write it for him, so...
He's got some pretty talented friends.
Ed Brisson, Jeff Lemire, Kelly Thompson, and this issue's Chip Zdarsky.
Yeah. Chip Zdarsky's been tearing it up, he did Batman, Urban Legends? But over at Marvel, he was killing it on, Spider-Man Life Story, Daredevil, a bunch of other stuff.
But he's got his Stillwater.
Stillwater from Image as well.
I really like the art in this. It's got sort of a grimy feel.
I was impressed with it. You said
anthology. We say it's a horror anthology.
It's a horror anthology, yeah. So it is, and it's going to be, each issue is a different story. It's not like a bunch of different story characters. The central unifying thing is a silver coin, which seems to be a demonic coin.
Yeah.
And this one, without doing too much into detail, deals with a rock band... like a garage band trying to make it in the 70s.
Yeah, it's 1978, and they're sort of
they're garage rock competing with disco.
Yeah, competing with disco.
And they hate disco.
Yep.
Spoiler,
and it feels like this feels like a little bit of slight. You know how whenever Ed Brubaker writes about characters in the 70s or 80s, you're like, oh, that's Ed Brubaker.
Yeah.
This feels a bit like Zdarsky's lens of if not him, maybe it could also... I don't know how young he is. Maybe an older brother or something like that. But it feels like his lens on, the era that he grew up in.
Right, right.
Yeah. I thought it was a really good first issue. And I'm a sucker for horror, so I kind of...
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's well worth the look.
And then Boom has Jed McKay, who is one of my favorite up-and-coming writers. He's doing Avengers Mech Strike right now. Before that, he did Black Cat. This is their take on Magic the Gathering. And it's basically the Avengers of Magic. They bring together several planeswalkers, and there's a threat that is going to bring together these planeswalkers of different alignments. There's a queen of insects and the undead, along with this heroic girl named Naya, and a scientist alchemist type. Basically, they all have these different abilities, and then there's a paladin type who joins them, and they're going to go on these world adventures to find whoever's trying to assassinate them.
If we were still doing picks and everything, this would be my pick of the week.
I loved this. The art's by Iguara, and it's really nice.
I know nothing of Magic. I mean, I played it back when it was originally released.
Yeah,
and
400 years ago.
Yeah, 400 years ago. And it was just the game. And I didn't really get into sort of the mythology, or it hadn't been completely built up. But Jed McKay really kind of consolidates what you need and just gives you the background on things of Ravnica and the guilds and what each one is. And I'm as I was reading it, I'm like, this is like D&D Eberron.
Yeah, it is. It's very cool. And it, again, like you say, you don't have to read or know Magic at all. Like, everything is.
But Nick, did it make you kind of like excited about this world setting?
Yeah.
We know some of these names. I know just from having sold at Ravnica and Planeswalkers and all that kind of stuff.
And I know,
but I don't know much about them. So, the idea of, a kind of cool story that will envelop...
Yeah, McKay just... I immediately was drawn into the story. I thought it was fun. It was a cool Avengers-like story, and I really thought the world was interesting.
Yeah, and it's a really good book. It is one of those that, if it was not based on Magic, if you didn't tell people it was based on Magic, You'd just be like, oh, it's a good fantasy comic. Good, like, fantasy adventure comic with powers. Yeah. Beasts of Burden has a new miniseries, Beasts of Burden Occupied Territory. This is Evan Dorkin and was Jill Thompson.
Who's doing it now?
But it's Benjamin Dewey is the artist who did the Autumn Lands. Really nice art.
This is like kind of been a pets that are like supernatural sort of detectives, kind of broadly, they're the theme.
Dogs, all dogs.
Is it always dogs?
Yes, but they did bring a cat in and they gripe about that.
Okay.
There have been cats in the other ones.
There is one cat that they have. They actually even mentioned in here.
Oh, is it?
They now have a salamander, a like semi, a flaming lizard, and one of the dogs is complaining about it. He's like, first the burden on cat, now this overgrown lizard. We'll have hedgehogs and wombats before you know it.
And you know, I've only actually read bits and pieces of Beasts of Burden over the years, but it's like, not that it's humorless, but it actually has somewhat serious stories.
Yeah.
And like serious real stakes. Sort of threats. Yeah. Like the supernatural threats are actually kind of real,
the
dangerous.
The animals are definitely in peril. Yeah. Actually.
So this is a, there's an immortal sheepdog who's telling these modern day about his adventures. And it's basically a story of 1947. And he goes to a U.S. base in Japan with his handler, who's like a human paranormal expert. And they're basically helping the army with a supernatural case.
When you describe it, it feels very Hellboyish.
It is very Hellboy. It's very influenced by Hellboy.
Yeah, I always thought that it vibed that way.
This is one of those, like, I feel if you hadn't read any Beasts of Burden, this is a good way you could jump in, because it is just it's a standalone story, 1940s.
But they always have people who can draw the animals so well.
The dog can read, so he jumps up on the table and, like, reads intelligence off the desk, and the army guys are like, what's your dog reading the comics? And they don't really think, they're like, this guy's weird, he's got a dog, I don't know what he's doing here. But the dog in fact is smarter, and so he can help them out and that kind of thing. So they find a local dog and they give him this potion to let him talk to them. It's really fun. I actually thought it was a really good issue.
Are the original ones still in print?
Yeah, they're in trades.
Awesome.
We have the trades. Aftershock has a new superhero book from Steve Orlando and Patrick Piazzalunga.
Okay.
It's a great name.
It is.
This is it's a Superman type who appears to die in the first page, and then he comes back later. And the reveal, I'm going to go ahead and reveal, is that basically it is a robot they've built that different people inhabit to give the illusion that the Superman is still alive. And different people have different skills. There's like a really strong guy, so when he's inhabiting it, he says... basically, then when you're piloting the Patriot, he's strong enough to carry. You're strong enough to carry the moon, and I can handle a building. And then there's like a scientist woman who pilots him, and she's like the smart one, but with a weird science adventures. And they all are better using certain powers. But yeah, it's like a big government secret of they are running a Superman type.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fun idea. Batman 107, the second issue of James Tynion's new Scarecrow story. Nick, did you get a chance to read this?
I have read just the first few pages of it.
So Dave and I both really, really liked this.
Yeah. It was one of those ones where, like, every few pages was something I was like, oh, that's a cool idea. Oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
I'm just going to throw out one thing that I thought was neat is that, you know, the one of the events that's sort of hanging over all of this is that there was this, like, gas attack on Arkham that killed hundreds. And, like, I guess they don't know for sure that it was the Joker, although you would assume it was, right?
But right? They don't know for sure, yeah.
And so everybody, this felt like it was meant to be a little bit of a pandemic parallel, where they said that, like, everybody's been buying up gas masks in a panic, you know? And Scarecrow seems to be taking advantage of this, and he's, like, leaving these little scarecrows around town that people find, only they don't seem to actually be traps or anything. It's just heightening the extreme paranoia in a city that's, like, right super on the edge.
Sort of Blair Witch, like, leaving the little tree.
Yeah,
thingies.
It's like, basically it seems like he's trying to get them to turn on each other.
I will give the artist credit on that redesign of Scarecrow. It's gorgeous.
This super artist, good. Jorge Jimenez, is great. Like, yeah. All the art throughout is really good. But there's a new commissioner.
There's a new commissioner.
Which is a really good thing. Harley Quinn shows up as she's appointed herself sidekick to Batman.
And it feels like a direct tie-in to the first issue of the new Harley Quinn series, which was really good.
Yep.
So you'll get a sense of the shared universe in there.
There's a couple new villains. There's some really nice use of Oracle, which is really good to see Oracle again.
Yep.
And there's a new force called the Unsanity Collective, which is interesting.
Yeah, they mentioned them from the previous issue. And... I guess the way that Batman is going to go after them, Randy, yeah. you know, sort of per the last page, yeah. was kind of cool.
That was fun. Also, there's a backup story with Ghostmaker, which I kind of liked.
Which is, yeah, his new ally guy.
So,
yeah.
I will say that I have to give somebody credit that I don't normally talk about, is an editor.
Yeah.
Ben Abernathy. I don't know who this person is.
Okay.
But he is editing all the Batman books, and he is, like, kind of weaving this cohesive thread throughout.
No, that's interesting.
Because in the... There's a new... The next Batman, Second Son.
Yeah.
It's dealing with a lot of the stuff you guys are talking about.
Okay.
And I assume he's still the editor on Harley Quinn, and that's why there's
probably
some cohesion there. So I really have to give him credit for, like, really stepping in and, like...
It's the kind of cohesion that I like, where it's not, like, big crossover stuff, but, you know, a page or two here and there of, like, reminding you that these guys are in a shared universe and have the same... You know, might be working on the same problem occasionally, or dealing with the fallout of the same stuff, so, is pretty cool.
So, just to mention it again, the next Batman, Second Son, written by John Ridley, art by Tony Akins and Travel Foreman.
Is this a continuation?
It is. It's weirdly kind of like a flashback before he's Batman.
Yeah,
kind of setting it up. It's mainly about the Fox family.
Is it in the modern day?
It is. It's
okay.
It's basically the same time the Batman is happening.
I don't think we ever got to the point of saying this is the next Batman was from Future State, the event that was like just a month or two ago, where we had like four issues showing this guy. So he was a character in the future, but like he's in the present somehow.
Yeah, he took over as sort of the mantle of Batman because of. He is, like, the kind of black sheep of the Fox family.
Okay.
So, he is not, is it Luke Fox who is the, Batwing?
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And he is basically Luke's, like, estranged brother.
Got it.
And, he's off doing sort of, like, vigilante things in other countries. Grifter is involved, but apparently it also deals with the Fox family inheriting most of Wayne's fortune. So that's where that went.
Interesting. Grifter's running around a lot of Bat books these days.
He is.
So wait a second, though, but, like, I still don't get it. Like, that character was existing in the future state future, I thought.
Yeah, but that wasn't, like, super far flung into the future. That was set basically when the magistrate had been created, which is talked about. The new mayor of Gotham has got plans for sort of, like, vigilantes.
Yeah.
Basically, future state seeded a lot of ideas.
Oh, interesting.
And writers
are going
back and kind of weaving those tales back into current.
So he is operating in the present.
Yes.
What's he call himself?
Batman? He doesn't have a name.
Okay.
He's basically just kind of like, you know how Bruce was, like, before he became Batman, on that first mission, he was, like, just like a mask?
Yeah.
It's kind of like that.
You know, I think it would be interesting if he, you know, acquired a unique name and the series just shifted, like, because I see this is just a four-issue miniseries, it looks
like. Yeah, it is.
If, like, the next time he shows, you know, he is, you know, Ghost Bat, whatever.
Yeah. But it also does have a Batwing in it, like the armored Batman.
Yeah.
So, I thought it was a good first issue.
Nice.
It was basically like family drama with a little bit of a superhero zen, which I was really enjoying.
So and just to kind of round out one or two more DC things, there's a Green Lantern one this week that sets a stage for a new Green Lantern. This is built around the idea that there's this kind of gathering of like galaxy wide forces, sort of like it's like they're working out the state of, like sort of a federation of planets kind of thing. I think it came from something Bendis was doing, and this may actually end up being a sort of a positive thing, a sort of a... something of a unifying force for the galaxy.
Right.
And the Green Lanterns are, like... there's actually a debate. They're, like... Not only is there a debate over, like, whether the Guardians of the Universe will be the Peacekeepers, you know, and a.k.a. the Green Lanterns, or whether they'll actually even be admitted to this, like, essentially this... This federation,
right?
And so John Stewart sort of takes the lead, but there's also a lot of focus on what's her name
from Young Justice, basically the Green Lantern that stole the power, essentially.
Yeah. She gets a huge spotlight in it too.
She was called Teen Lantern. I don't know if she's actually got a better name than that now.
I think she is wanting to use that, but so they probably do call her that in there.
Oh yeah, I see. Actually, it mentioned.
Anyway, you'll see like the Sinestro Corps there in there, people from Thanagarians. The Kaluans? Is that the people who are Brainiac people?
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought it was an interesting enough first issue that's kind of, you know, it looks like, in its way, this is doing more than they usually do to, like, kind of set the stage for DC's cosmic universe. You know, the same way Guardians of the Galaxy and stuff like that sometimes charts out more than just their own individual story. It's also a little bit about what's going to be going on in all their spacey stuff.
I really like the art.
Yeah.
I like, it's Dexter Soy and Marco Santucci. Oh,
yes.
I know Dexter Soy from something, and it may have been like he worked on a Green Lantern before, but like the designs are kind of like the... I don't know it since I haven't read it, but the Ambassador John Stewart, where he's wearing
it's got a kind of cloak.
Cool design.
Yeah, I liked all the sort of casual stuff. Also, like when the Sinestro Corps shows up and they've got their kind of ambassadorial
wins me over too. Because it's got Dexstar in it. the little Rage Lantern Kitty.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Rage Lantern Kitty.
I'm going to give this a shot. That looks really cool.
What else we got, Randy?
So let's see. Other than that, we've got. Some trades.
I have one more single issue.
Okay, yeah.
The second issue of Nocterra.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Snyder and Tony Daniels' book. I really am enjoying this of sort of the... Basically an endless night that is corrupting humans and turning them into sort of weird animalistic shades.
It's his own sort of like supernatural apocalypse. Where Jeff Johns is kind of doing the kind of more traditional Fallout apocalypse, but with a little bit of his thing, superheroes.
And it's turning into sort of this road trip of terror.
Yeah.
As like this...
Well, the lead character is somebody who like delivers in this,
people.
Like, in these kind of dangerous nightscapes.
Yeah, and now they're being pursued by these potentially like darkness corrupted individuals that are wanting the people that she's shepherding. And it's just a really cool idea, and some of the characters are really getting interesting. So
nice.
I'm really digging this one.
Boom has Seven Secrets Volume 1, which is a Tom Taylor story. This is about the Seven Secrets, the order that protects the Seven Secrets. And
buy this trade. It's good.
It's really good. I don't want to give too much away, but it's...
If you've been liking probably Tom Taylor on Injustice or the new Nightwing book
or Suicide Squad, anything else he's done,
then it's probably worth your time.
Yep.
Rat Queens hits Volume 8. This is one of our best-selling trade series. It is the all-female D&D book, basically. They've had a new writer for, I want to say, like two trades now, and I believe there's a new artist on this one. Super fun. Very very R-rated. Worth a look. And then Warhammer 40K.
Yeah, that's the... since Marvel got that license along with everything else, hey, I just realized those guys, you know, the Tyranids were a ripoff of the Xenomorphs from Aliens.
Yep.
Now that Marvel has all of these licenses in one place, finally maybe Space Marines can fight Xenomorphs.
They can have like Iron Man armors too.
Can we have Xenomorphs, Tyranids, and Brood?
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and all that.
Plus, there's a Predator.
I will also mention a hardcover that came out this
week. Well, actually, I just want to endorse this Warhammer 40K story. It's the story of like one of the big Ultramarines, Marnius Kalgar. It is a good introduction to the setting if you haven't read it.
Yep.
As well as a cool story that. Is both set in the present, like there's big action adventure in the present, and then it also flashes back to his origin, and so you see all about the making of a space marine. And it's written by Kieran Gillen, so I'm not going to say that if you liked The Wicked and the Divine that you'll probably like this, but like I mention it because his pedigree kind of comes from like what people might think of as more ambitious comics, but he is a Warhammer 40K gamer and a gamer in general.
I have no doubt he has sat and played Space Marines.
Yeah,
it's really good. I think we both liked it. I don't know, Nick, did you read much of this one?
I read the first few issues and I thought it was really good. I actually really liked Jason Burroughs' artwork in it.
Yeah.
I felt like it was very. It did the Warhammer universe justice.
Yeah. With Warhammer, you want to be a little careful that you. You both sort of embrace the kind of fascistic nature of it, but there needs to be a sort of a sly subversiveness sometimes about it, or
yeah.
a dark humor
yeah.
or something. If it's too sincere, it kind of becomes this creepy endorsement.
Yep.
I want a Caiaphas Cain comic.
And I'm happy to say that Kieran Gillen does not do... he does not, like, knock his heroes, but he does... He hits the right tone, I think. And yes, I would read a Caiaphas Cain one if they get around
to
it.
He wrote Uber about the Nazi superheroes, so he can write around that kind of
stuff. Yeah.
Also, Dave, I see you have the Usagi Yojimbo color version, which came out this week.
Yeah, and you know what's unique about this? There have been color versions of various Usagi Yojimbo stories, if people don't know. He's a rabbit samurai.
Yep.
But for the longest time, because of the way the series was produced originally, about, like, the first, I don't know, the equivalent of, like, 30, 40 issues or 40 or 50 issues,
yeah,
couldn't, including the origin of the character, couldn't be reprinted because the license was at another company.
Yep.
Well, suffice to say, they now finally have it all together at IDW, and so that stuff has never before been reprinted in color.
I was wondering if he was coloring it himself, but he is not.
Is it Tom Luth?
It's actually Rhonda Patterson.
Okay. Oh, I don't know who that is.
Luth was the guy who did his covers, and like long time, whenever they did do a color story, he had done it. But it looks really good.
Yeah.
And although his like art, you can see he's still developing just a little bit as an artist.
Yeah.
But it's like this series kind of hit the ground running.
It's good from the start.
And you will see like him, like those things. That I remember in that first storyline when I read it, I was like, oh, yeah, his samurai lord falls in the battle plane and he goes to like sever his head so that like he can take it back and the enemies can't claim it. And I was like, okay, so this is going to have like slightly an all ages vibe, but still kind of push things a little bit.
Yeah. And then, yeah, there was one hardcover trade release finally got this week. That was the Batman Who Laughs.
Oh.
There's a trade of that this week.
And then,
the big hardcover is Dark Knight's Death Metal.
Right. So if you want to see how basically the new DC Universe was born.
Yeah. If you want to see Batman on a cool motorcycle.
If you want to see Superman who looks like a rocker.
Or Wonder Woman wielding a chainsaw
of truth.
It is called the Chainsaw of Truth.
Yep, all these things and more in Death Knight. In Death
Battle. Honestly, that doesn't even begin to cover the weird
stuff. It's weird. No, it's crazy.
There. Yep, yep. All right, that's comics for the week. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about Big Monkey versus Electric Lizard, Falcon versus Winter Soldier, and Invincible versus everyone.
Monkey.
So now we're going to talk about Big Monkey versus Electric Lizard.
Yes.
That is specifically Godzilla versus Kong over on HBO, and in theaters if you're brave enough to go to theaters right now.
Yep. Do we have a spectrum on this? Here's a quick question.
Did anyone love it?
I don't know if I would say I loved it.
No. Nope. Did anyone hate it?
No.
Nope.
Are we all in the same place?
I thought it was pretty entertaining to watch. Few scenes that I was like, ah, that's cool.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I thought it was about, like, kind of Godzilla King of the Monsters overall, which is, like, I was like, man, some of this human stuff is dumb.
I rank it, I believe, Skull Island is the top of this franchise.
I kind of agree, yep.
And then I put this below Skull Island, but above either Godzilla, and then I say King of the Monsters, and then the original Godzilla thing they did in 2014. That's my order.
I think I like King of the Monsters a little bit more than this one.
Really? Same here.
Okay. There was no big monkey in that King of the Monsters, so...
But there was a big Mothra. There was a big King Ghidorah.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't love King of the Monsters for whatever reason. It didn't click with me as much.
And I thought the human stuff was a little bit better in King of the Monsters as opposed to this one.
I felt like the guy, Bernie, the conspiracy podcaster who
Brian
gets...
Brian Tyree Henry, I love that guy.
Yeah, he's a great actor.
I don't know who he is, but he felt like a Michael Bay character in this.
He was the prowler.
Okay, but he felt like a Michael Bay character in this. he's like a goofy conspiracy
it
podcaster who can like apparently like sneak into bases all the time that they do throughout the whole movie. I forget what Star Wars movie it was from the newer trilogy when they're walking around on Starkiller Base or whatever and it's like this giant thing and there's just like no security whatsoever. You can just walk around giant empty halls.
Isn't this directed by Adam Wingard who did Rogue One?
Did he do Rogue One? No, he did something else.
The guy who did Rogue One is the guy who did Monsters. And the guy who did Godzilla 2014.
Adam Wingard did something else, though. Yeah. I forget what it is. And, of course, he is doing Thundercats. Oh, he did VHS.
Okay. I've never seen it, but it's a decently accepted horror.
He did
horror.
Your Next. He directed the 2016 Blair Witch remake. It's a lot of horror.
Huh. I've heard good stuff about Your Next.
Is good.
He directed the live-action Death Note.
Oh, he did the 2016
I did try
Blair
the
Witch.
Blair Witch thing, though, and it wasn't any good.
VHS 2.
Yep.
But just to quickly say, are we in spoiler territory?
Yeah,
we're
in spoiler territory. Yeah. Yep.
Hey, let me quick ask you something. Like we had this discussion earlier, Nick. Would you say they had a winner in this? I know that there's several different fights, but would you say there's a winner?
Yes.
And you would say the winner is
Godzilla.
I agree.
It is Godzilla. I was thinking that they had given a, they basically done like the, I think maybe it's because I my expectations were when I was watching it. They had the big fight on the aircraft carrier in the water, and King Kong's at very much at a disadvantage there.
Yeah.
And Godzilla wins. Like Godzilla very much wins. And then I thought, like, when they went underground, when he found the axe, I'm like, oh, now we're going to get Kong's win, and then we'll get them to team up.
Yeah.
But in fact, that I think was my expectation, because Dave reminded me, he's like, you know, he does die in that fight. And I'm like, yeah, I guess he does get his butt kicked at both times.
Yeah, Godzilla stepped on his chest until his heart stopped beating. And then they had to, like, revive him with...
You don't get much clearer of a win than that.
Yeah. However, I mean, he did, like, throw down with Godzilla. I mean, he does, like, right. kicked...
Nobody gets punked in this movie. No. And, but they did do, in the tradition of sort of, they had a Marvel team-up against... big spoiler, Mechagodzilla.
Their Mechagodzilla is wacky. It's the it's like the ghost of Ghidorah running it.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's not like wacky in presentation.
No, but it's a little weird in its setup.
Yeah, I actually thought that was a cool idea in the sense that it was like a weird old like kaiju movie.
Yeah.
But I don't think that they explained it at all what
it
was going on.
Very Pacific Rim drifting kind of.
It did.
A weird kind of.
But like they were inside the actual skull of one of Ghidorah's heads. Yes. Was like inside Mechagodzilla.
Yeah, because there was some kind of psychic residue or something.
Well, it wasn't inside. It was like controlling.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. They had it as a separate thing.
Control.
But yeah, he was like VR sort of controlling it.
Also, they did some weird pseudoscience in this.
Did Ghidorah's, like, evil spirit sort of take over?
Yes, he
did they make it clear?
No.
Okay. No. That's what I was going to say is, like, I actually wouldn't... I think that's an okay idea. I don't mind
it,
whatever.
They made it clear enough. We all got it.
Yeah. I guess that's true.
Like, but it was a little weird. It's like...
By the way, their solution to severing that connection is one of the dumbest things I've seen since Independence Day's viral upload.
Yes.
In fact, Independence Day's viral upload is actually much smarter than happened.
I actually would definitely compare this to Independence Day. It's a bunch of characters. It's mostly nonsense, but I had a good time watching it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that they went all in on the Hollow Earth, and that was a cool thing.
Yeah. Yep.
You actually get to see
gravity flip, and that they've got these ships that can go through it. I'm like... Does that make sense? It makes enough sense.
I believe I read... there was a book that came out in, like, the late 80s or maybe early 90s that was, I think, by a physicist. I want to say, like... Was it Rudy Rucker? I forget what his name was. But anyway, that had a story about a Hollow Earth thing that I think is discovered... Man, I want to say it's, like, in some sort of pirate times or something like that. Huh. And... they kind of weirdly go into the physics of it, and I think something like that does happen. So I think this might be like the pop version of what might actually be sort of like, if it were to exist, it would have to work like this.
I thought the effects across the board were really good.
I thought so too, although weirdly I thought like Kong looked more real in Skull Island, but I think they were, he was actually much smaller in that, and I think that scale is a little bit more readily able to make look real.
Yeah.
And I think they wanted him to look dusty and real and Vietnam jungly. And in this, it was like they intentionally went with brighter color palettes and stuff. And, and like, there's no doubt the CG is very good in it.
The animal lover in me felt bad when Kong got hurt, and I didn't care if Godzilla got hurt.
Godzilla's just a big lizard.
Godzilla's gonna come back. He's Godzilla, but look, Kong, I was like, he's just a big monkey. He's
sad.
He gets
a cool axe, though.
He gets a cool
weapon. I remain Team Big Monkey.
So am I.
But that's the thing, I think for me, but that's why Godzilla King of Monsters falls a little below, is there's no big monkey in it, and I'm much more interested in Kong than I am in Godzilla.
Well, Kong got the one human character that I actually gave a shit about. The little girl. Yeah. I actually thought she was a good character.
And it was a neat idea that she, without anybody kind of having known it yet, taught King Kong sign language.
Yeah.
I was like, that is a cool idea.
Also, I do think they did a good job of showing that Kong is sort of he's not a monkey. He's an ape.
Yes.
And he is human. He's humanoid. And so basically, he's a little smarter.
Mm-hmm.
Like he learns sign language. He's actually able. They're able to like get him more simple than just like beat up the big monster. They're able to impart upon him what he's doing and why a little bit. Whereas Godzilla is like a force of nature and just a big dumb monster.
Yeah. But I think force of nature is what people want from Godzilla.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of part of the appeal. But yeah, Kong has a lot of expressiveness. Like when he's in the Hollow Earth and he sits on the kaiju type throne thing, and he looks like fucking Conan and stuff. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Poor Tokyo though, man. That guy.
Tokyo or Hong Kong? That was Hong Kong.
Was it Hong Kong?
I think it's Hong Kong.
Okay. I thought it was Tokyo. But
I don't remember.
Yeah, I wasn't. I honestly wasn't paying too much attention. There was an evil corporation in it that was trying to use the Hollow Earth and make Mechagodzilla to kill Godzilla.
Downloading a weird energy pattern. They
emailed the power source themselves. Yeah,
I was like, does that work?
I definitely recommend it. Just went live last night. I definitely recommend you guys watch the pitch meeting for Godzilla vs. Kong. It's delightful.
For those who don't know, the pitch meeting is like a YouTube series from what's the
parent
George, site?
Screen Rant.
Screen Rant does it. It's a really funny tongue-in-cheek meeting between a producer and a guy making the pitch, played by the same dude.
Yeah.
You can pick any given one of those and usually have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
And it seems like he's been lately trying to get a little bit timely and, like, knock it out when there's a new movie hitting.
Yeah, yeah. I've enjoyed this. I don't know if I'm going to go back and watch it again until it, like, hits streaming regular.
I'd probably watch scenes.
Yeah, in
it.
Yeah.
The fight scenes are pretty neat.
I'll have it on at the store or something when it.
I would say my. I think there's a lot of good fight scenes when they're fighting on the aircraft carrier and stuff like that.
Yeah.
There's stuff where like Kong is getting like pulled underwater and they drop depth charges. And so like, by the way, the who wins, who loses is all a little bit blurred because there's often humans attacking at the same time in all of these.
Yeah.
And they drop some depth charges that save him, but I was like, oh no, monkey's gonna drown.
Yeah, I know. I got this word, monkey was gonna drown.
Yeah, Kaylee was very much like feeling like Kong should not get hurt. He's getting hurt.
He's the nice one.
He's a good monkey. I mean, he did murder a lot of people.
Bad people.
He does eat people.
But bad people.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, he is carnivorous.
He saved people, too.
What did they show him eating? Was it like a big giant mass of fish or something?
No, it was
like
one of the giant monsters in the Hollow Earth that he, like, drinks.
They dump a bunch of fish on the deck.
Ship deck, yeah.
I did like him drinking from the skull of his defeated monster.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
When he takes the axe to Mechagodzilla, pretty righteous.
Yeah. Yep.
I think because like that was like his consolation prize. He'd sort of lost the big match, but he wrecked.
Well, you get sort of the Hobbs and Shaw ending where they're teaming up.
Yep. It's pretty cool when like Godzilla would like breathe atomic fire or whatever, and Kong would be like holding his mouth open, just shooting it, letting it blast everywhere else.
I believe you called that in the trailers. I think you called the axe.
I was wrong because it was like I thought he was. I mean, he did, like, charge it up.
He did charge it up.
But the scene that I was looking at was I thought that it was one where he's leaping at him, and it was just a fight.
That was a fight, yeah.
I had the right idea, but the scene that they showed on the ad that I thought was that was, in fact, him just, Godzilla just trying to blast it.
Yeah.
If you've got HBO Max, or if you want to go to the movie theater, this is a good time.
It's worth a look.
Go ahead and make some popcorn. It's that kind of movie.
It is, yeah.
If you miss a few minutes of it, as long as it's not a fight, you're okay.
Yeah, it's true. If you miss a fight, rewind, but
just
otherwise...
Whenever Skarsgård is on the screen, you can go get some popcorn.
Yeah, that's true. All right, real quick, we want to chat about Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's just, it's kind of... I guess there's things I maybe knew that they were going to be doing along the way, but I had kind of forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of it is, I think, what's been notable about the three episodes now.
Yep.
So halfway through?
We talked about the first one. We're halfway through, yeah.
Yeah. Well, first of all, they almost immediately subverted things in episode two.
Yep.
Some of the characters that looked like straight-up bad guys became notably more sympathetic.
Yep.
Whether we're talking about the... what's the...
John
Flag
Walker?
Smashers.
Flag Smashers.
The Flag Smashers, okay.
But also, they bust out Baron Zemo.
Yeah.
And Zemo is... either potentially on a redemption arc or at least being used in that way.
Yeah.
I don't know quite where it'll end. It could end badly for him because now the Dora Milaje are on his tail.
Yeah, it's not going to go
And I
well.
Thought that was cool.
Yeah.
Bucky's telling Sam, let me give you a hypothetical.
Yeah, that was funny.
It was amazing.
The prison break, it's on the level of the security in the Kong versus Godzilla. It's like, wait a minute, this is a maximum security prison and they got out by giving him a key? Like, it's a little ridiculous, but it's a fun bit.
But my brain is like, he's the Winter Soldier, he has, like, subverted everything for how many years.
Yeah.
If anybody could do it, he could do it.
Yeah.
So let's just quick hit up some of the other big guest stars.
Well, the reveal of Isaiah Bradley.
Yeah.
Nope.
Just in case people don't know, from the comic that came out maybe, 15 years ago now, something like
Truth.
That? Truth, that revealed that Cap, the super soldier serum, had been tested basically on black soldiers in the 40s, and has remained part of Marvel's history.
Did you guys get the sense that in the MCU that's different? Because I got the sense that basically he got his powers from Steve Rogers' blood.
Yeah, it sounded like it may have, like, they may have been, and you know, I will say, Truth slightly bothered me in the sense that I wanted at least kind of Cap's story to be, if not, like, you know, not tainted by, like...
And that's what I was going to say. I think they did a better job here. Basically, it is like, Dr. Erskine was a genius. He wasn't experimenting on unwilling black men. That basically, he created the Super Soldier Serum, and then they started... The Army basically did this thing.
Well, we know that because Thunderbolt Ross and Incredible Hulk, I mean, that's how we got Abomination. By one of the serums that had been created. Yeah. So
I think that little tweak made a big difference for me.
Yep. Yeah. But they're still, it is very clearly still being used to tell the same baseline story, which is about the sort of exploitation. But it also means that now the door is open. We can see flashbacks with Isaiah Bradley, and we see his grandson in it, who we know in the comics becomes Patriot in the Young Avengers. There was a talk about him being in Korea and having tangled with the Winter Soldier and torn his arm off.
Yeah, that was awesome.
There's both on one level, I don't want to see it because that was a cool description.
Yep.
And on another level, I'd love to see a flashback that showed it.
Also, I can't believe they're using Battlestar, a.k.a. Lamar Hoskins. That was a deep cut. This show for me, it is like it is made just for me because it's like the Ed Brubaker Cap flavor.
Yeah.
It's all the espionage and all that. But it's straight up Gruenwald, which was like some of my first Captain America comics. So,
the 1980s Cap.
I started reading at issue like 335 regularly. I've read some before then. Because I know, Dave, you were on board with the Super Serpent Society and all that stuff, which is in the...
But I only read stray issues.
Okay, and that's
I wasn't really a Cap reader.
But I came on right when John Walker became Cap and read through all of that. Yeah. So all of this stuff with like seeing Battlestar and John Walker and... Flag Smasher and all that. This was the Cap era that I grew up on.
What's next, D-Man?
Maybe. You know,
I also want to say they did do John Walker pretty well. Basically opening the episode of second episode with kind of like a glimpse into like his backstory with friends and his girlfriend.
He is not just some like completely like gung-ho jingoistic kind of patsy or whatever. But he is also not like, he's not as quick on the uptake as Cap was.
Right. And he's a bit more of a, like, Cap was a 1940s soldier, a grunt, a good guy. He is a spec ops guy, and there's a little bit of arrogance.
Yeah.
And a little bit of that cop mentality.
He doesn't have powers, right?
We don't know, but I don't think so.
Okay. Because I could go either way on some of like the fights. I'm like, he does hit pretty hard, but he doesn't hit...
I thought they had made the point that he doesn't have the powers, though.
They straight out said he didn't have powers, but I'm still not sure whether they're lying or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To even have survived their tangle with the
Flag Smashers.
With the Flag Smashers, it'd be hard to imagine. But he does have the shield and armor and all that stuff.
By the way, those action sequences, both the truck thing in the second episode and the throwdown in this episode in the shipping containers.
Yeah.
Fantastic action.
Well, the third episode brings a lot.
We'll bring Sharon Carter back.
I was going to say, we haven't mentioned Sharon Carter yet.
Sharon Carter is great, and she gets kind of
her spy is left out in the cold thing, which, by the way, that Mark Waid did that when he brought Sharon Carter back.
Yeah.
That she had been presumed dead, and the S.H.I.E.L.D. had basically abandoned her, and she was kind of bitter about it.
But I guess the big thing...
Among the themes being built up here, by the way, seems to be about... abandoning people, you know, whether it's the refugees from the blip,
right,
or Sharon Carter, or Isaiah Bradley.
Oh, yeah. Or Falcon being abandoned by, like, the banking system and the people they can't save. Yeah.
What were you saying?
I mean, the big thing for me, at least, was the introduction of Madripoor.
Yeah, that was cool.
There's a lot of deep cuts. I think of Madripoor as being an X-Men thing because...
It was introduced in Wolverine.
Is that true?
Yeah.
So this is almost like sprinkling in some X-Men flavor before the X-Men have shown.
But Cap did go there.
He did. Yep.
And they actually, was it the Brass Monkey Bar?
Yeah.
That is actually where Captain America.
Yeah, created the Brass Monkey Bar, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the big locale for this, but they also do pass a bar that is called the Princess Bar.
Which is Wolverine's bar.
Which is pretty cool. There also is more of the graffiti of the Power Broker is watching.
Yeah.
There's
a big Power Broker reveal coming at some point. There's some theories I'm not going to spoil, but...
A part of me does not want those theories to be true.
Same, but also I think it'd be cool if it is.
Yeah. But this is...
Also, Zemo was fun.
Honestly, this is Zemo's episode. It really is.
What they're doing is they're deepening. They're doing the same thing WandaVision did. They're deepening these characters who are always never any more than backup. Like, we're getting more of Falcon, we're getting more of Winter Soldier, and we're getting a lot more of Zemo. And Sharon Carter.
Everybody they just made him a Baron. I love that they just was like, he was a Baron. Baron.
I love that too.
That he's got, Baron, he's Zemo. Rich, he's got a plane, he's got a butler.
Yeah.
He's kind of fun. He's both a source of resources to get them access to stuff in the show. Like, in other words, I can see why he just helps the writers get people places and stuff.
Yeah.
But then he also potentially has, like you say, a redemption arc or something like it.
Yeah.
We just don't know quite where it's going
to
land.
They're undercover operation to get into Madripoor.
Man, the goal, what is he? The Smiling Tiger?
Smiling Tiger.
Oh, man. That's a deep cut New Warriors villain.
Yeah. When I read that, because I was like, I know that name from somewhere.
Yeah, I was saying, I was like, I recognize the name, but I couldn't place it. Because it's because he's in like three issues of New Warriors. He's a small character.
I'm like, bring all these people.
Yeah, it's super fun. They're definitely expanding the universe, and honestly, it's just, it is so made for me. I love this. I love this show. All right. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come talk about Invincible. All right. Spoiler warning for Amazon Prime's Invincible. Although, if you've read any Invincible, you won't be spoiled anything. It's really only the first trade worth.
It's the first two trades.
Is it two trades worth?
Yeah, they don't actually do the him killing the Guardians of the Galaxy or Guardians of the Globe till like the end of the second trade.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Anna is joining us to talk about it.
Hi.
Because Dave has not watched Invincible yet, but Nick and Anna and I have. You guys are all caught up?
Yep.
Or
I have watched
four episodes.
Oh, there are four episodes.
The fourth one came on Friday.
I've watched three episodes.
Okay. So I thought, so quick impressions, I guess. Anna, what was your first? What do you think of it?
I have some opinions.
Yeah.
I kind of like it. I think that at times, I think that if I had been introduced to it via the second episode, I would like it a lot more than I like it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, I understand that the bait and switch that they give you is, par for the comics, that it's supposed to just be, a typical superhero thing until the big, scary, violent reveal of the bad guy.
Yeah.
But, I think that it was maybe a little too lovingly rendered for my tastes, which is to say that it actually, almost put me off of watching the second episode.
Yeah.
The big reveal at the end of the first one.
The extended Omni-Man versus the Guardians fight.
Yeah.
Because
a friend of mine that I was watching it with, who's apparently a big fan of the comics, and I'd never read any of them.
Did you know the twist was coming?
I vaguely knew the twist. I did not know it came that quickly because I was under the impression that it came three trades in. So I was expecting more Golden Age superhero shit. And my friend was oh no, which was my hint that something bad was about to happen because she has no poker face. But she went and showed me the actual panels in the comic.
Yeah.
And it's that whole sequence that takes place over the course of seven straight minutes of nonstop violence is literally just eight panels in the comic.
I feel like that is the Achilles heel of this whole thing, is that Kirkman loves the ultraviolence. It's true in Walking Dead, too.
Yeah.
And not just that fight, but, the alien invasion.
Yeah.
They just mow down innocent bystanders. People get killed all over the place. And it's and it feels because they have animation, they're oh, we can really show the action. And I'm this is what you wanted to do?
This is
the choice you wanted? This is what you thought was important to show?
So, that is, I think, the major weakness.
I agree. Actually. I do. I think that's its flaw.
I'm going to play the devil's advocate, the other side of the coin on this
Mephisto's
one.
Mephisto's advocate?
Yes, sure. I think, that opening scene is completely new, with them defending the White House.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that was showing how powerful these guys are.
Yeah.
And then, at the end, when they get killed, you don't want to punk them out, which in the comic, if it's just one pan, it's six panels of
that's fair.
Of bloodshed.
That's fair.
It's just oh, these guys were chumps. They actually do give Omni-Man a run for their money.
Yeah,
at times.
They almost take him out. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just because he is so damn strong.
Yeah, so, I just think that
I do agree that there is a high level of violence. There is.
And there's a bit of a pacing problem. Although, I think we would all agree probably you had to do it in the end of the first episode.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
You had to do the reveal because people and, you don't be able to settle into what happened with the comic. Well, with me at least, as I settled into the comic of oh, I kind of like this. It's about a young hero and his dad's Superman, and it's gonna be fun to watch. And
it gets just tremendously darker.
Well, the other thing that I do think that was really good about that reveal is that they did sort of lull you into a false sense of security. Like it opens with like this pretty classic like. Drama comedy moment like where the guy's like I'm going on vacation with my kid and you're like oh that guy's fucking dead.
Yeah, he's dead
and of course they like completely bait you. It turns into this like very silver agey like the heroes show up, nobody dies, everybody gets rescued, like the villains are like making jokes and the good guys are making jokes, and at the one point where you think that the tension is like really bad that one of them's gonna die, like, you know, Superman comes and saves the day and like there's a great musical stinger, and so, like, there's no death and no violence, like, pretty much anywhere up until that point, and then suddenly it is just, like, 8 minutes of nonstop, like, grotesquery. Yes. Which, like, I like to think that my tolerance as a person who threatens violence with the slightest inconvenience for cause, my tolerance for this sort of thing is very high, but I was like, ooh, like, could not watch.
That said, once I got past the twist, I think this is a really good adaptation of a comic I'm not sure I love, but it also, I own the first three hardcovers, and this is the kind of thing where I'm like, now that I know he ended, I kind of want to see how this all ends. Like, I know it gets good, and I'm like, so I'm at least going to keep watching it, and I might wind up picking more comics up because of
it. I think the comic has pacing issues.
Yeah.
Like, completely, because I lost interest, not only because of the ultra-violence, but also because it just felt a little long-winded towards the middle of it.
Yeah.
Like, okay, you're doing sort of your Walking Dead shtick where you're repeating your kind of arcs a little bit.
Right.
And I did read the ending of it. Okay. And actually, I think the ending is spot on, really good.
I've heard the ending's really good.
And they do some cool things with Mark. And, you know, I'm hoping that there's a little bit of hindsight 2020 that Kirkman is able to clean some stuff up. And the writing room, because he's not writing everything. He wrote, first episode. Yeah. That other writers.
I saw Corey Walker, one of the artists. The artist is one of the writers as well, though.
That's cool.
So I think they're going to get the opportunity to clean it up a little bit.
Yeah.
And they're probably going to up the violence a little bit because why not? They have the ability to. But Adam Goldberg, is it? No. Who's Seth Rogen's partner? It's Seth Rogen and Adam. Basically, they're the ones producing this.
Right. Is that who is producing?
Yeah, and they did Preacher as well.
Yeah,
so.
But. They're really good. They have, like, this kind of... Seth Rogen is turning into a really good producer.
To some extent. However, as with Preacher, I feel like... And did they do it? Did they have anything to do with The Boys?
Yes, they are actually producing The Boys.
I feel like, unfortunately, just like Kirkman has this, like, love of 90s violence, I feel like Seth Rogen and those guys... We know Rogen's a big old stoner.
He is.
I feel like they go a little bit into the, like... Yeah, let's do the gross out humor. It's a little bit of that if you put a teenage boy in charge of a TV show.
But,
The thing that I hate is, like, the recurring gag where everybody vomits.
Yeah, I don't need that.
Like, I just, like, I'm done. Come on.
Yeah.
However, The Boys is, like, really high on my list of best television from last year.
Love The Boys, yeah.
I will begrudgingly admit that The Boys is very, very good.
Yep.
So, I'm being won over by this show a little bit.
I like it. I think the animation... I saw some people griping about the animation. I think the animation's great.
I think that the animation is too good at times.
The voice cast is amazing.
The voice cast is selling the story in a way that I think really elevates it.
And I think to some extent, one of the reasons that they could do that reveal at the end of episode one is that they had J.K. Simmons playing Omni-Man, and so you already liked him, even though we really hadn't seen that much of him.
No.
Yeah.
But J.K. Simmons... You just like him. He's no matter if he's a schmuck or not.
Yeah, he's always a likable presence.
Yeah, but Stephen Yeun as Mark,
who is great. Like you can hear his voice crack sometimes when he delivers lines, and I'm just completely blown away.
Teenager, yeah, for sure.
But like
Jason Mendoza as
Rex Explode, but also Zachary Quinto as Robot,
who I also love. As Adam Eve.
Yep.
Zazie Beetz is playing
Mark's girl, like love interest.
No, not Amanda. What's her name?
I forget.
The girlfriend. Yeah.
Yeah. Amber. The girlfriend. Amber. Yes.
Yeah. And then you know Seth Rogen voicing the alien is pretty much perfect.
Like, yep. Delightful.
There's all kinds of fun stuff in here.
The fourth episode does reveal some cool stuff, which I'm not gonna talk about, but I like
that. I also thought Walton Goggins playing there, Cecil Stedman there,
Nick Fury.
That was really good. Also, the Monster Girl bit where Monster Girl just beats the shit out of Rexplode was delightful.
I think, was that a fourth episode?
I don't recall.
No, that's in third episode.
Oh, that's in third episode?
Yeah, it's in the third episode.
I will, full disclosure, I watched this when I was very tired, so I may have fallen asleep through that.
Yeah, Robot reforming the Guardians.
Yeah, that's episode 3, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Robot. I think Robot is delightful.
Yeah.
And Zachary Quinto does a great job.
Yeah. Does Clancy Brown voice the...
Clancy Brown voices the Clancy Brown detective, yes.
Oh, the Dark Detective. The,
yeah.
Who voices the bad guy twins? Or the clones?
Oh, I forget who the voice is.
It's somebody really Mahler notable. Twins. The Mahler twins. I love those characters.
Yeah.
They're a lot of fun.
It's a fun world. It's fun characters. And unnecessary violence and grossness aside, it is a really good show. And I think for most people, the grossness and violence is going to be part of the selling point.
Yeah.
It's just for Anna and me and some others, maybe put you off a little bit.
Well, that was sort of what I meant was, one, like, if I had come in with the second episode and kept watching from there, I don't know how it continues to go with violence, but, like, in the second episode, it doesn't really linger on it much. Like, the violence is either, like, John Wick style, like, over the top and kind of, like, vaguely artsy.
Yeah.
Like, with the Omni-Man scene where he's on the invading alien planet, like, grabbing the guy and, like, dragging his skull through mountains and stuff. Which is, like, it's over the top and it's, like, weird and almost funny in a way, like a darkly humorous kind of way. But when they, like, played the violence, like, straight, with the exception of, like, the occasional gag thrown in, it was too much for me.
Yeah.
Like, I can deal with, like, The Boys, the way the TV show does it, where it's, like, almost comedic, like, laser eyes baby type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, in the second episode and onward, it seemed a little more quicker paced than that. Like, you see Omni-Man, like, as extremely fast and extremely powerful, and as such, like, violence does not really linger on screen so much as it did, like, the first episode where you watched it all in slow-mo.
Yeah.
Because it was through the eyes of the Super Speedster. But yeah, I do think that if you can get past that first roadblock, even if the violence isn't your thing, you may like it a little more.
Yeah, I'm liking it. It's on my watching list, for sure.
Yeah.
It's a good show.
All right, that's it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.